Success as a salesman comes at a cost. Everybody who has sold anything in life and made a career for themselves out of selling knows that at the soul of the business, when all is said and done, there would be a fundamentally changed person in you than what you had started out with. For some people, it is the process that changes them. For others like me, it is a singular event. And my event came on a cold day in December 1984. I remember the rush I had felt that day. True success is a drug so many people never earn in their lives. Maybe athletes at the tail end of the game, with the crowd roaring their names, would feel something so rare repeatedly. It was good. The walls of the hotel I was at had a vibrant liveliness to them when I sang in the bathroom. It was as though I was singing to an audience of millions of people. I was that excited. I hadn't had any sleep in about 48 hours since I had gotten the news of my nomination, and the words still rang in my ears. Salesman of the Year. It was hard to believe. There I was, alive at that moment. My flight to Michigan had been 60 minutes long, but it felt longer. My body ached from the 8-hour trip I had taken the previous day to drop off my daughter at my parents, who lived in a different city. I managed myself out of the bathroom when I was sufficiently washed. Salesman of the Year. I mouthed to myself as I lazed on the cozy sheets. I tried to imagine the fun fair, but nothing in my mind could conjure the comparing of the feeling of utter bliss that was running through me. As an intern salesman almost a decade ago, I had such dreams of such days, and I had read all the papers of the awards of Albert Richardson Hall and how the career of each of the winners had grown to become iconic. Callum, my boss at the car dealership, would be present. He sent messages of how proud he was of me. I was doing good work at one of the leading companies in the country, and it was no easy feat. I tried to imagine the faces they would wear when I win. It was not until late into the night that I was able to get some sleep in preparation for what would be the biggest day in my career. A brash, mindless jabbing on the door woke me up from the depths of my slumber way before dawn. The noise of hands beating on the door was so loud it seeped into my dream and seemingly pulled me out. My head banged from the forceful awakening, and I jerked upright on my bed. "Who the hell is that?" I shouted at the door. Then there was no noise. It was quiet, and I was simmering with rage. I waited for an answer, but when there was none, still, I pushed myself out of bed and walked straight to the door. I had a sense that something was awry. The lack of tension intimidated me of safety within the room, but the off chance that someone was trying to save me from a disaster pushed me back to the locks. The door yawned as I pulled it back and waited for the stranger to speak. He was dressed in a long brown coat. His shirt was pristine white, and they glowed under the reflection of the light overhead. From his chest pocket to his hip, a golden chain accentuated a slender frame. His skin was ashen and his eyes were sunken. The bags under each eye had a black hue of swelling. He had a dark presence that was not easily perceivable, but unraveled when he lingered. I sensed something menacing was about to happen, but I didn't know for sure, so I was careful not to startle myself needlessly, even though I had started to panic. "Mark Thorpe," he inquired, one brow jumping over the other to register a feature. I straightened my body and cleared my throat and said that it was indeed me. He sighed, and I saw a smile drift past his face. It was gone before I registered what I was seeing. He dipped his hand into the side as one would do to fetch something, but what came out changed both of our lives. A knife. It was puzzling at first. It crippled my senses, and I simply stood there, watching it happen. He retrieved the knife without missing a beat, swiftly stabbing at me. My mind processed the pain slowly, but it hurt whenever he cut me. His knife dipped into me. I was bleeding from every part of my body before realizing that I had been shoved back into the room. I saw Death's gaze into mine, and I cowered. My bowels turned loose, and I let it rip. My body burned from the inside as I watched myself fade into oblivion, wondering what I had done to deserve such a cruel and unexpected end. Your kind took her away from me, Mark. All we did was trust you, he said in a tone so strong. She died in a crash 3 years ago because of one of the cars you sold her, telling her it was in good condition when it wasn't. I tried to protest, wondering why I had to be killed for a matter that was no business of mine. He lost his wife to a bad salesman, and it turned him into a serial killer. He explained to me, each line of his explanation more potent as the last. The deception that led to the accident had scarred him deeply because his wife had been pregnant with their child. You know how many car salesmen I had to kill to atone for her death? He asked and answered before I could speak. 23. And they all begged like pathetic wretches. I couldn't beg. I couldn't speak. The blood from my gut clogged my mouth, but I saw him pull out a gun. I was surely dead. But in a surprising move, he turned the gun on his own head and fired. Then it all went black, as if my most terrifying moments ended. When my eyes opened, I half expected to be in some afterlife dimension. But my family was by my side, assuring me that I had survived the deranged killer. And the gunshot had alerted the hotel staff, and they called the police. I survived the ordeal, but I knew I could not continue at that job, for a fear of maybe another killer might find me, and I would not survive their attacks.
Would appreciate if you could hit the like button before moving on to the next story.
Jane, she said with an enthusiastic laughter, and all of a sudden, her countenance changed. A frown stole its way from her forehead down to her cheeks, pulling her lips into a droop. You don't remember me? I was not smiling. I did not remember her, just as I did not remember most people I had gone to high school with nearly 2 decades ago. It was such a long time since then, and so much more had happened. I struggled to not betray my confusion, but seeing her mule in dejection broke my heart. Jane did not appear to hold it against me, but I also felt like an asshole, robbing her of the moment to reconnect with someone she knew at the high school reunion. I took one breath in and threw caution to the wind. Oh, Jane! I blurted, pretending to be just as enthused to meet her as I was to reconnect again. It's been ages! I watched her face go from blushing red to a flushing pale as relief washed through her. It felt good to see the smile on her face return. Reconnecting was harmless, I reasoned. I was always so inconsequential in class, and you were always the IT girl. I know, it's hard to remember me when you have the entire world pining for your attention. It's been ages, Becky, Jane moaned. She promised to keep in touch with me and immediately asked which was my preferred mode of reconnecting. I said I was on Facebook. Jane sent a request in front of me, and I accepted her request. The night was not over before I received her first message. I thought it was strange, but to break her cute heart was something I could not offer to do, so I obliged her and replied. I received no less than 1,000 messages from Jane over the course of a month, ranging from personal requests, like my marriage and how the kids were, to where I lived. I told her I was unmarried. In a flimsy manner, which I would later regret, I also gave her my address, unsure that she would ever come that far, as we lived at least 5 states away from each other. Jane told me she was married and she now had 3 kids. I told her I was happy for her accomplishments. She asked if I didn't want kids of my own or a marriage of my own. I told her I did not because I was yet to find a partner that met my desires to be married. I could feel the conversation steer into the territory that made me uncomfortable, so I asked Jane to discontinue talking about it as it made no difference to the quality of the lives that we led. I was happy. Well, the messages grew even more personal when Jane hinted that she could not believe she would have something that I did not have, a family. Now, it was at this point in the second month that I considered all of our exchanges weird. I neither envied her good fortune in marriage nor desired her motherhood. I decided that I was going to block Jane on a very fine Tuesday morning, as she was starting to creep me out with her incessant messages going on about the same things. Well, by the next day, which was a Wednesday, I felt a huge burden lifted off of my shoulder when I did not receive messages from Jane. It felt strangely relieving to have gotten rid of her through that block, and I wanted nothing more than for it to stay that way forever. But the forever that I desired lasted less than a week. I heard my doorbell ring on Saturday evening of the next week, and it was so strange that there was a familiar but strange person at my door. She smiled when she saw me open the door, and from quick assessment, I could see that she came dressed in a black shirt, spandex pants, and a pair of sneakers. She wore a black baseball hat, which made her features difficult for me to recognize at first. But then she smiled, and it dawned on me that it was Jane.
"You blocked me on Facebook. Why?"
Her smile, which had been cute at the reunion, was now creepy. I choked on the ball of saliva in my throat. "Why are you showing up at my house?" I retorted, puzzled by the weirdness of it all. "How did you even get my address?"
"You gave me your address, silly," Jane hinted.
And I sensed danger immediately from her menacing grin. My life flashed before my eyes. It made me sick that I had been so foolish to have been manipulated into trusting Jane. I was still in deep thoughts of regret when Jane, without warning, lashed out at me. She lunged through the door and tackled me to the floor before I could register what was happening. She grabbed my hair and placed a knife on my throat with the stern warning for me to remain still. The coldness of the blade against my flesh was enough to heed her warning. I blurted and cried and apologized in an incoherent, drawn-out babble. There was no way I could quantify the horror that I felt in that moment, realizing that my life was in her hands. I hoped, for my own sake, that she was not angry enough to kill me because I had blocked her messages on Facebook. "I'm so sorry," I managed to say as tears streamed down my face. I was hot from fear, and my body was shaken to numbness.
"What are you sorry for?"
she said to me as she yanked my hair, allowing me to pick myself off the floor slowly without relieving the knife from my throat. I didn't know what I was sorry for, so I mumbled whatever word that came to my mind. She sighed and scraped the knife up from my neck to my face. Then she turned the sharp edge, cutting into my skin as I bawled in horror. I clutched the injury instinctively and fell back to the floor with blood in my hands.
"Not so perfect anymore, huh, Becky?"
Jane taunted me as I lay on the floor crying.
"Now you have a mark on your face that will always remind you that life shouldn't be as perfect as you have it."
"Why?"
I could only manage, feeling pangs of panic and terror.
"Because I hated you, Becky,"
she confessed.
"I hated you when we were in high school because you had everything I wanted and could never have. And now you go to Ibiza on vacation, live in a fancy home, and you have nothing to worry about. And you don't even notice that I want everything that you have."
"Oh," I sobbed when it finally struck me.
"Goodbye, Becky. Enjoy your life with a scar on your face,"
Jane said before she left me in a pool of my own blood from my bleeding face. It was not the last time I saw her. Jane was arrested for what she did to me, and she went to jail for it. But my life, with the gash on my face, had fundamentally changed forever.
"We're finally here." I put my phone down and peered out of the car window, a frown furrowing between my brows. "This is it?" I said, unable to stop the disappointment from seeping into my tone. When my parents had told my brother and me we were going on an exciting rural getaway, I'd expected more than simply a random cabin in the middle of nowhere. For the past 20 minutes, all I'd glimpsed were trees and dusty roads that didn't look like they'd been used in years. Beside me, John, my younger brother, seemed equally unbothered by the structure, returning his attention to the comic he was reading.
"Oh, don't be like that," our mother said from the front seat, twisting round to look at us. "It'll be fun, a full disconnect from the outside world."
I looked down at my phone signal. Of course, there wasn't one. I let out a sigh.
"Yay, sounds amazing," I said sarcastically, unclipping my seatbelt and pushing open the car door.
As I stepped out, I immediately noticed how quiet it was. Nothing but the rustle of trees as the wind blew through the leaves. I had to admit, it was very peaceful compared to the usual city sounds, but it wasn't enough to make me excited about staying here. The rest of them also climbed out of the car, and we all carried our luggage to the cabin we'd rented off Airbnb for the next 4 nights. Inside was exactly how I'd have been expecting it to look. Rustic, rural, and cozy. Everything was wooden and furnished with rugs and tapestries, with a big log fire in the center of the living space. With no internet, our parents had insisted on bringing board games and books to keep us entertained. I wasn't averse to a good board game, but the thought of spending 4 nights in such close quarters with the rest of my family wasn't the most appealing thing to a teenage girl. After putting our stuff away in our respective rooms, we all gathered in the living room for our first family activity. "All right, Cluedo or Battleship first?" I groaned outwardly.
"Those games are so old. Can't we play something new for a change?" I said, sitting down heavily next to my brother on the sofa.
He still had his nose in a comic book, barely paying attention to the rest of us.
Well, I guess we could," our father said, scratching his cheek sheepishly. "I just thought we'd start with a classic, something we can all play."
I sighed at his obvious disappointment.
"All right, Cluedo it is then."
As he began to set up the board, a strange smell caught my attention. It was something chemically that made my nose hurt when I breathed in too deep, but I couldn't figure out where it was coming from.
"What's that smell?"
I asked, glancing around. It was so strong it was starting to make my eyes water. I could see the others getting affected by it too, covering their noses with their hands.
"What is that?"
Mom said, squinting her eyes as tears began to stream down her cheeks.
"God, it's awful! I'm starting to feel dizzy,"
John whimpered from beside me. So was I. Dark spots began to cloud the corners of my vision, and before I knew what was happening, the ground seemed to give way beneath me, and I collapsed into darkness. When I came to, my head was pounding, and my cheeks were sticky with dried tears.
What the hell was going on?
I sat up, blinking away the grogginess, and looked around. I was no longer in the cabin. The walls were bare and white, and there was no furniture. No windows or doors either, just white walls like some kind of prison. John was still unconscious beside me, but our parents were just starting to stir across the room.
Mom? Dad? What's going on?
I asked breathlessly, scrambling over to them. Dad shook off his disorientation first, looking around in a frenzied state.
Where the hell are we?
I don't know, I said, my eyes widening in panic.
What was going on? Why were there no doors or windows? Were we trapped here?
I just woke up here. I don't know what's happening.
Someone played us,
Mom said, groaning softly as she raked her hair out of her face.
That smell from before. It must have been some kind of gas.
I swallowed, my throat feeling so tight I could barely breathe.
Why would someone do this? Are they going to hurt us?
I don't know.
Mom? Dad? Julie?
I heard John's groggy voice from behind me and rushed over to see if he was okay. Luckily, nobody seemed to be hurt.
So far, we'd just been rendered unconscious and transported to a room from which we couldn't escape. Once we'd all regained our senses, we took a better look at the room.
There has to be some way out of here, Dad growled, slamming his fists against the white walls. How else did we get in here otherwise?
I nodded. If we got in here, there must be a way out. It was just hidden somewhere, but we scoured the entire room and found nothing. That's when John noticed something, drawing our attention over to the corner wall.
What's that? He asked, pointing up toward the ceiling.
A small black dot was embedded in the wall. As soon as he saw it, our dad's nostrils flared in anger.
It's a camera, he said, marching up to it. Hey, I know you're watching. What the hell is going on? Let us out of here.
From somewhere unseen, a crackly voice started to speak.
Nice of you to finally wake up.
My dad's lip curled in anger as he looked toward the camera.
Who the hell are you? What's going on?
What you're experiencing right now is what my daughter experiences every second of the day, the voice answered, taut with emotion.
Locked inside her own body, unable to move, unable to talk, trapped inside her own mind, unable to cry for help. I'm sorry about your daughter, but what the hell does it have to do with us?
It has everything to do with you. You have no idea who I am, do you?
My dad's shoulders begin to tremble with anger.
No, we sure as hell do not. Just let us out of here.
Tracy Ellis is the name of my daughter.
All at once, it was like the air got sucked out of the room. My dad's demeanor completely changed, the color draining from his face, the tension releasing from his shoulders, leaving him pale and hollow-looking.
Tracy,
he whispered, shock clouding his features. The three of us looked at him in confusion.
Do you know who he's talking about?
My mom asked, her eyes widening at her husband. He didn't answer.
So that's what this is all about.
Indeed it is. I'm glad you finally understand. I want revenge. Revenge for what you did to my daughter.
Dad, what is he talking about?
I asked, my voice trembling.
2 years ago, I was in a car accident. I managed to get away without harm, but the other car wasn't so lucky. The driver and his teenage daughter were injured badly. Her name was Tracy Ellis.
No way! Why didn't you tell me any of this? Mom spun her face to her husband, her jaw trembling in disbelief.
I was racked with guilt for what I'd done. Of course I couldn't tell anyone about it.
The voice started speaking again, full of bitterness. You ruined my daughter's life. Now I'm going to show you what it feels like.
No, Dad gasped, choking on his own words. No, you can't. It was an accident. I never meant to hurt her. I'm so, so sorry. Please don't hurt my family. Take me instead. I don't care if you kill me. Just don't hurt my family.
The voice was quiet for a long moment before a cruel, calloused laugh poured into the room, making me wince.
Fine. As long as I get revenge, I don't care who it is. You destroyed my life. Now I'm going to destroy yours.
What? No, Dad! I cried, running towards him. But then that familiar chemical smell assaulted my senses, and I started to collapse before I could reach him. His horrified, grief-stricken face was the last thing I saw before everything went dark. The next time I opened my eyes, I was back in the cabin in the middle of nowhere. This time, only three of us woke up. Dad had disappeared. We didn't know where he was or what had happened to him. Only that he was gone, and he wasn't coming back.
No way!
I blurted as I slammed my palm against the steering wheel. My instinctive reaction to the frustration that I felt was to grind my teeth together. My car had stopped of its own accord, in flooding weather, on the road. Like a mocking reminder, the pattering of raindrops against the roof of the car deepened my sense of desolation. The view on the screen of the car was utterly black, an isolated pitch blackness that my gaze could not pierce through. A violent thrum of rain came at once, and I sunk into my seat. I was all alone, I realized, as far away from work as I was from my home. My stomach sank. I reclined in the seat and decided in the moment that I had no choice except pushing my car from where I was to the Walmart, which was luckily about a minute away from where I was. It was a manual transmission, so it would not be a difficult task for me. I slipped from the car seat and braved the rain once I had made sure all of the mechanics of the car were in place before I started to push. You piece of shit, I cried as I walked around the car to the back. I kicked the tire of the car for good measure and to expel the rage that I was feeling. The 5-minute walk from where I was to the Walmart lasted about 20 minutes pushing the car. It was a most tedious task, one that wore me out. By the time I finally arrived at the Walmart parking lot, I was breathless and gasping for air. The rain fell with the same ferocity, with no sign of letting up. I checked the time, and I was at least 30 minutes late from the usual time that I would arrive at home. I cussed at my luck as I whipped my phone from my pocket. With a quick run through the contacts on my phone, I was able to reach a tow truck. There's a monstrous storm out here. We'll be with you when it lets up, the attendant at the tow truck company said to me when I asked for availability. It was obvious, wasn't it, that the rain was not one that could aid driving. I had been stupid and regretted that I had allowed myself to drive in that rain. My engine was toast. I kissed my teeth. Wouldn't even start even if I tried. The futility of it all, from the thought of it, made me snicker at my own loss. Hey, man, someone called me from behind. He was a tall man, 6 feet and at least 3 inches from what I observed. His skin was pale, and his appearance was of one well-tended. He had a lanky physique, the type that forced his shoulders to hunch over and his shirt to hang by the scruff of his neck. A broad shoulder caused his blue and white striped shirt to appear longer on his body because of the way it draped on him like a curtain. He wore black pants and a pair of boots. I sighed when I registered his appearance. Are you good? He asked me, stepping closer. I nodded my head to dismiss him. Still, he was persistent. He moved closer to me, and I noticed his eyes, sharp as an eagle's. He had an unsettling glance in the depths of his eyes that made me uneasy at first. You don't have to lie to me. I work here. I saw you push your car in, he said, and flailed his hands in the direction of the parking lot. He flashed me a smile, and some of my unease evaporated. He mentioned his name, Brandon. I played a good sport and reciprocated by telling him my name was Luis. It was an exotic name, he claimed. Was I foreign? He asked. And he added that I did not look like I was from a different country. I answered truthfully that I was not. My parents had a very good friend in their youth who was Colombian, and they had named me after him. He clapped his hands delightfully and told me that it meant the world to him that people were able to have such friendships with each other. Then he asked me again if I had any problems. By the time he had asked again, he had charmed his way into me, and I found myself unable to resist him. A damn engine stopped just a minute down the road. You wouldn't believe it. He noted that I was drenched. He asked if I was waiting for someone to come get me. I told him I wasn't. How was I going to get home? He asked. I told him I'd called the tow truck and that they were going to come get the vehicle. I'd probably hitch a ride home from the Walmart. He offered to help me. I just finished my shift and I'm headed home. If you want me to, I could drop you off at yours before driving home, he said. It was a harmless proposal. One that swayed my decision to accept it before I even processed the information. I gave him my address, and his face lit up. He knew the place well enough. I was lucky, he commented, and without further conversation, he asked me to join him in the car. Brandon had so much chemistry with his car that it made driving with him so much fun. His car was nothing like my manual vehicle that pissed me off so much. I mused at how good it would be to get one of these. The ride was smooth and the journey was fun. Until it wasn't. Brandon, I think you took the wrong turn, I muttered quietly to not betray the panicking pang of my heart. I know, he said matter-of-factly. The blood in my veins ran cold. My brows furrowed and my beating heart started to thrash even louder than the storming rain. It was difficult to breathe as fear started to envelop me. Without thinking, I turned to the door and tried to pull it open. It wouldn't budge. Sheer horror made my fingers cold. Open the damn door! I yelled, turning around to him. But he was faster because when I swung, he already had a knife in hand, blade glistening even in the dark. I don't work for Walmart. How the f*** did you believe that? He cackled maniacally as he teased the knife down my throat. I'm gonna have fun with your body. I can feel the rush already, he declared. I could already feel my vision dimming out as fear crippled me and drove me dizzy. It was difficult to believe that I had just walked into a serial killer's arms and nobody knew where I was. I pleaded with him to let me go. And he called me a fool. A fool who deserved to die. I could not think clearly. I was so afraid that nothing made sense in my head. Not even when I pilfered through his glove compartment with the knife to my neck and found the central unlocking system. The doors clicked, and I sensed the tension reach such a climax that I was numb. I jumped out of Brandon's moving car, defying the near-fatal repercussion that may have happened. I took off on foot in the darkness and I ran as fast as I could until I couldn't run anymore and it was all pitch black. When my eyes opened, I was in the hospital. I was told that I had been found by a good Samaritan who I had told, in my delirium, that I was being chased by a serial killer. The police had run the plates and a trail of missing persons had been last seen at that Walmart, just like me. A search for Brandon has also led to his arrest. And an investigation is still on to establish the full extent of his crime.
My best friend Gracie and I hadn't seen each other since we both went off to separate colleges. Now that we were both back in town for spring break, we agreed to meet up at her place and have a nice night in. We decided to binge some Netflix and order Chinese. I got there in the evening, and Gracie greeted me at the door. She wrapped me in a big hug and said that her parents weren't home, so we could finally get some time to catch up. We could talk all about our experiences in college. Since the last year, she hadn't been answering my texts and calls as much as she used to, so I felt like I really didn't know what her year had been like. Right away, I noticed that Gracie had changed. She was much thinner than the last time I saw her. Her skin was almost gray. Weirdest of all, she was dressed in all black. I'd known Gracie since first grade. I could count on one hand how many times I saw her when she wasn't wearing pink or purple. You look different, I said. I tried to sound neutral. Do I? She asked, acting surprised. Well, I joined this new club at school that's all about meditation and disconnecting from negativity. I guess it's helped me become a healthier person. Cool, I said. But she didn't look healthier at all. She didn't look like herself. We sat on her couch and talked for a bit. I tried to ask her about her dorm and her classes, but she kept bringing the conversation back to that weird club. It was all she wanted to talk about. I got the feeling that she'd been brainwashed. I tried to tell her about my life and some of the drama that I'd been through in my college, but she kept telling me that I was being negative. She'd worked hard to purge all negativity from her life, and she didn't want to hear all my gossip. I started arguing with her. I wasn't being negative. I was just telling her about what I'd done this year, both good and bad. Things got pretty tense after that, so I suggested we just sit back and watch Netflix. I figured she wanted to watch one of the new rom-coms that had just come out, but she said she had a better idea. I was shocked when she scrolled to the horror section and picked a bloody graphic horror movie. This wasn't what I wanted to see at all, but she was already mad at me, so I didn't say anything. As the movie went on, people started getting murdered in really disgusting ways. It was just awful. I sat there in silence, but Gracie kept giggling at the carnage. After a pretty gross decapitation, she even clapped. That's when I knew something was really wrong with her. I grabbed the remote and paused the movie. "Why would you want to see something like that?" I asked. "To give me some ideas," she said. My blood ran cold. What did she mean? "Ideas for what?" I asked. She reached into the couch cushions, searching around for something. "For how to dispose of you," she said. Before I could move, she pulled out a butcher knife that she'd tucked away in the cushions. I screamed, just like one of the women in that movie. I should have run away, but I was honestly too shocked to move. This was my best friend. We knew everything about each other, but now she was like a different person. She pushed herself closer to me on the couch, holding the knife in front of my face. I tried to stand, but she swung the knife around, warning me to keep still. "The club has taught me to cut out all negativity in my life," she explained. "That means I have to cut you out." I looked into her eyes, and I knew that she was serious. She shoved the knife forward, cutting into my shoulder. I kept on screaming. "Shut up," she demanded. "You know that you deserve this." "Why?" I said. "All your gossip and judgment, you're a bad influence. And the world would be better without you." She pulled the knife back and looked at the blade. It had a streak of my blood. I had no idea what she was talking about. Sure, we'd always joked with each other and gossiped about some of our other classmates, but it wasn't toxic or anything. I was a good person. Gracie was too. That club must have twisted things around, made her think that there was something wrong with our friendship. I wanted to argue with her, but I couldn't think straight. My shoulder was throbbing and I'd never been so scared in my life. She would have killed me if we weren't interrupted by the doorbell. The Chinese food had just gotten there. Gracie turned towards the door, which gave me enough time to shove her off the couch and run. I ran toward the front door and swung it open. The delivery guy looked like he was about our age. He jumped back in surprise. "Help me," I said. He dropped the food and took me back to his car. I locked the doors and explained what had just happened. Together, we drove straight to the police station. That was the last time I ever saw Gracie. When we came back with the police, her house was empty and the door was open. I never found out what happened to Gracie or what sort of club would change her so much. I still think about her a lot, and I hope that she's overcome whatever madness took over her. But if I happen to see her again, I know I'll do the same thing. I'll run away.